we'll do our thing here. But when you get into the airplane, and I'm sure all of you pilots realize this, when you've flown an airplane a lot, you really know how to feel the airplane. It becomes part of you. I remember one time General Chappie James was talking to us about flying in Southeast Asia, and some reporter said, gee, General, you're a pretty big guy. Is it hard to get into the F-4? And he looked at him and he says, I don't get into the F-4. I put it on. And that's right. When you get in an airplane like that, and you pilots know this, you feel comfortable with the machine, you know how to make it work, you know what the right sounds are, the right vibrations, and when something changes, like when you're over the middle of a lake, you go, oh, gee, what was that? You know, it's the same thing with the O-1. We got to the point in the O-1 where flying it was secondary to using it for what we were doing. And that little O-1 was an extension of me, okay? It took me up into the sky so I could see further and wider around me. It gave me the radio so I could talk to people long ways away. And then when I wanted to identify a target on the ground, I'd roll that steely-eyed beast in there and fire a rocket down there, and there it is. So that airplane was literally an extension of me as I'm trying to conduct my missions. The base that we used over in Laos, up there in the north, there a place called Lung Chin, kind of Steve Canyon-esque, kind of Sneaky Pete. Yeah, there were times when that was the busiest airport in the world. Why? Because we had Air America pukes coming in and out of there. We had Air Force A1 guys diverting in there because two of their jugs blew off, you know, and we had Laotian forces in there because everybody was flying O-1s then. By this time of the war, all of the U.S. conventional O-1s are gone. The last O-1s we're flying are the Ravens up in Laos. And that was because of the fact that as the war developed, the North Vietnamese brought down more guns, more missiles and stuff, and it was just too dangerous in most areas for us to use O-1, so we went to the O-2, we went to the OV-10, but in the Raven program, we continued to fly the O-1 because we're involved in a secret war, and we have got to be able to hide within the interior of our allied forces. And so when we were up there, we were flying Laotian O-1s with their markings on them. Or sometimes we would change the markings out. And I'll show you a picture of that in just a second. But that's what we had to do. So the O-1, though, for what we were doing, was perfectly adapted for our missions. And I might add, too, it's actually a very sensual airplane to fly. Why? Because when I was flying in my OV-10, I'm in a sterile cockpit. It's closed. It's tightened. I can hear the airplane. I can see what's going on, and I can talk on the radios. But I really don't have much more of what's going on down there. But in the O-1, I would fly along with the windows open. And, man, when you got the windows open, all of a sudden you can hear a lot more things, like large-caliber bullets going by your airplane. They go whoosh, whoosh, they go by. You can hear the ping when rifle shells would hit your airplane. Ping, ping. You hear that. It's very, very noticeable. It gets your attention. Plus, up there, you can smell things. And when you're in the middle of a heavy engagement and there's a lot of stuff going on and you're bringing in a lot of heavy type ordnance, the different weapons, as they explode, have different smells. And you can it helps your whole sensual surrounding, and you're totally into the moment. Plus, you can literally taste the airplane when you're in it, and all of the feels that are accompanied by the movement of the airplane and the generators and all that kind of stuff. And like I say, it was the most sensual airplane I ever flew in my whole time over there. Okay, next slide, please. Let's see what we got. Okay, here's one of my O-1. Whoops, go back one. Sorry. There we go. Here's one of our forward airstrips. It's just a dirt runway out there, and we had a lot of those, and a lot of times we would need to drop in for gas or maybe to rearm. Sometimes we would need to go somewhere and talk to a specific commander about an operation, and that's how we would get to them. In fact, share one story with you. I was in a field like this one day, and I get a call on the radio. You need to talk to Bob. And I said, who's Bob? And he said, well, he'll be at the airplane in about 5 minutes. Okay, so I'm out at the airplane. This guy walks up and says, hi, I'm Bob. Hey, Bob, I'm Daryl. How you doing? What's going on? He said, I need you to do something for me. Okay, and he hands me this box. And in this box are a bunch of leaflets. And I said, what is this? He says, I want you to fly over this little village right here, and I want you to throw these out the window. leaflets of some kind, okay? Propaganda, psyops, whatever. Okay, so I get the box and I put it behind me in the back seat. I'm by myself that day. And I'm flying out over the location there, the village, and I'm reaching back. I got the windows open. I'm reaching back and I'm grabbing a bunch of these and I'm throwing them out the window like this. And now the box is empty. And I notice, I can see on the ground that the individuals that are down there are obviously getting the message because they're all firing their rifles. So it's time to leave. So I push the throttle forward and I pull back on the stick and nothing happens. What? I look back at my elevator and it's covered with leaflets. Holy Okay, so I'm thinking, well, I got to go back and land, right? And I got to get over those mountains. And I'm slipping and doing power settings and trying to figure out how I can maneuver this airplane. And then I remembered what some old 01 pilot had told me. He said, if you get stuck like that and the elevator's not working properly, you can always use reverse trim as a little mini elevator on the tail. And so I did that, and by God, it worked. Because the elevator's on the other side, on this side. And it worked, and it got me back into my base. And so I, one night live right there. And there were a lot of missions like that. We had to improvise and do what we had to do to support our allied forces up there in that area. And there, like I say, there were a lot of heavy fights that took place in those days.
Daryl, how about worst mission?
Worst,
most dangerous, most you know, where the pucker packer was way up.
Well, I was up one day, and I got one of those inevitable calls. Any Raven, monitoring this frequency. I need your help. So I sauntered over there, and I was in. My instructions were, can you hurry over to this location? And my answer was, no, you don't hurry in an 01. Come on, give me a break. I'll get there when I get there. You know, we'd be doing 80, 85 knots, something like that. Maybe 100 knots if you're going downhill. But anyway, so I get over there, and I got a ground team. They're walking up a valley, and there's an ambush out in front of them. And the ground commander saw it developing, so he wanted me to come in there and see it, break it up. So I get over them, and I look down, and I can see the enemy was building what they call the classic X across the trail. So they got gun pits firing over. And I said, have your lead man give me a mirror flash right now. And I see a mirror flash, and I said, that's your front guy, right? I said, 120 meters north of you, they're setting up for you right now, and I can see they got heavy machine guns, and this is going to get ugly. He said, well, what can you do for us? So I called for an airstrike. Nothing was immediately available, but I could get some artillery in there, but you can only bring the artillery in so close. And once I did that, then the enemy figured out what I was doing, because usually they wouldn't mess with you unless you started messing with them. And then they all started shooting me, and I could hear the rounds hitting the airplane. One round came through the right door, right there, went right by my arm and went through the back seat right there. Right there, okay? Hold that thought, okay? So I'm doing my thing, and all of a sudden, I begin to notice that my engine's running rough. Oh, gee, this is not good. So I look up there, and my cylinder head temperature is over here, and my oil pressure is over here. Though that's a bad combination, okay? And then the engine quit. So now I'm flying a glider, okay? Fortunately for me, I was high enough and not too far from that base there at Long Chin that I just showed you that I was able to glide down over the mountain and get into my airfield and landed. So I was okay, but I had a serious pucker factor issue that day. Now, there's a little bit more to the story. When I got on the ground, all my Raven buddies and all the Hmong pilots came around. Oh, 2-5, what happened to you, 2-5? And I'm telling them the story. And then one of the guys looks in the back seat, and he sees that bullet hole. And his voice goes way up here, and he's sticking his finger through the bullet hole like this. And then all the other guys came around. Same thing. They're all sticking their finger through this bullet hole. And finally, one of the guys said, 2-5. We want to fly with you, 2-5. And I said, why? You're very lucky, very lucky. Nobody there, you take bullet. We want to fly with you. Figure that one out. So that was probably, now I'll tell you, we still have time? We're good?
Yeah, okay. We're getting there.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Another amazing airstrike one day. The biggest danger to our ground forces were North Vietnamese long-range artillery cannons, 130 millimeter guns. And so for us, that was priority number one. So whenever we were flying out there, all of the Ravens would monitor the same Fox Mike radio. And anybody who saw a muzzle flash from a 130 millimeter gun, he owned that target, and his instructions were stay eyes on, go and find it and kill it, okay? Now, the thing about those guns were the North Vietnamese were masters at camouflage, okay? But they never covered their tracks. And heavy trucks and heavy machinery make big tracks, right? And you could follow them right up through the woods, and all of a sudden they would stop, and probably within about 50 feet, there's a gun there, okay? So I go over and I do this, and then I see the gun fire. I own it. I get over there, and then our rule was the next set of fighters that come in, you own it, and you put them on there. So I fly over to the target, and I can see what grove he's in. I had some F-4s with Mark 82s. They dropped the bombs, blew off all the trees, and there's the gun. It's shaped like a perfect Y. You can see the stand there and then the barrel pointing to the south. And I had him right there, and I called up to our airborne agency, control agency called Cricket. I said, I got a 130 millimeter field gun, and we need to kill this thing. And he says, well, I got two F-4s inbound. Flight lead has a laser designator, and number two has two Mark 84 2,000-pound laser-guided bombs. Would you like to have them? Yeah, I'll take them. Yeah, bring them over here. So these guys check in. I talk them into the target. Generally mark the target. The flight lead says, I got the gun. I'm lasing the gun. And I say, okay, you're cleared hot. So I'm doing my thing, and I'll never forget the one dropping the bomb came right along here, and he drops the laser-guided bomb. And the laser-guided bomb now is going to go to the reflection of the laser on the gun. It's a precision weapon, right? So it's guided. So as the bomb comes off, it's wobulating like this. But it's going to go down there and hit that gun, okay? So I'm watching. I got my binoculars on the gun because I'm up in the northern part of the PDJ where you had to be a lot higher because of the guns. And I watch the bomb come down, and the bomb hits, and the bomb does not detonate. That happens sometimes. But when the bomb hit, it physically hit that gun, okay, and just ripped the out of it. Man, it was boom, big pieces flying around. And I said, great shot, lead, you killed it. And he said, what are you talking about? The bomb didn't go off. I said, the bomb didn't have to go off. That 2,000-pound projectile just that gun. It's kill. It's a kill. He says, are you giving me credit? I said, are you going to argue with me? I mean, what's going on here?